98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Rush Hour Reboot.
Here's what happens at 8 o'clock. Maloney takes over. She digs through all kinds of stories, sometimes sports, sometimes not, presents them to us without us knowing what's coming. We react with our opinions. You support us or rip us on Twitter. It's the Rush Hour Reboot.
So, starting off first, a statement regarding Wednesday's Colorado at U of A. I was going to say Arizona because they don't want to be called U of A, but when I read it, I was like, Arizona State? But no, Arizona, the game after they decided, the Pac-12 conference announced the game involving Colorado at Arizona scheduled for Wednesday, December 2nd, has been postponed. So is that the first Pac-12 basketball game to be postponed? Or U of A had theirs with against NAU postponed, right? So how in trouble is college basketball?
Oh, my goodness. You know what? Honestly, right now, I'm not just looking at college basketball. I'm looking at college football as well. And you have to wonder if, in fact, if they're going to finish this season. At what point in time do they shut down the whole process and actually say, you know, we're just not going to have a playoff this year. It's not going to happen. I still think that is a possibility. I do. Depending on how bad the numbers get nationally, I still think there's enough people in college athletics, whether it's basketball or football, that are worried about the optics of it all.
I understand where you're going, but I'm sad to say, I think money drives everything. And they lost so much money not having an NCAA tournament last year that there's so much cost-cutting going on in every athletic department. Now, it might have been needed. I mean, there might have been a lot of fat, and then you know, I had to trim a lot of fat on athletic departments. I'm not going to go there because
no.
I don't know. But there very well could have been that case. I think they're going to plow through no matter what. So when you talk about, will they have a championship? Yes, I believe they will. But Maloney, are they in trouble? I think it's going to be the toughest job of any college football playoff committee and any NCAA tournament committee when you're comparing apples to apple slices when somebody's played 20 games and somebody else has played 30 in basketball.
But you got to care about the kids, right? You're already making so much money off of them.
Why should they start now?
The fallout continues, though, following the Cardinals' Week 12 loss at the Patriots. So how does Cards head coach Cliff Kingsbury feel after watching the tape?
Everything's out in front of us. When you look around the league and some of the teams that lost yesterday, nothing really changed as far as the landscape of what we need to do to get into the postseason. And our guys understand that. We're all disappointed that we didn't you know, take that next step yesterday and thought we had great opportunity to. But moving forward, you got to put that behind us and just work harder to be better. There's a lot of teachable moments on that film, and we can learn from it and be a better team.
So our Arizona Sports poll question brought to you by Sanderson Ford is up now at arizonasports.com, and it asks, how many remaining regular season games will the Cardinals win?
Ooh.
So they're at home against the Rams, on the road versus the Giants, back home for two against the Eagles and 49ers, followed by a road game at the Rams. Your choices are 4 or 5, 2 or 3, 0 or 1.
Wow, boy, that's tough right there. You'd have to say 2 or 3 right now based on their inconsistent play, and that is the number one thing that is plaguing this team overall. It's been the inconsistency. The up and down. Do they have talent? They have talent. There's no doubt about that. Do they have excellent offensive talent specifically? Yes, indeed they do. But it's the up and down, the back and forth. They need to become much more consistent in their play. If they do that, go to the 4 and 5. Go to the 4 or 5 wins. If, in fact, you tell me they learn to be more consistent in their approach. The problem is right now we've got 11 games. That says that's not going to happen, so I'm going to go 2 or 3.
This is a great question, but I hate it. I don't want to answer it because I didn't even think about it, but now I'm going to go with 1. I think they're only going to win 1 game the rest of the way. And the reason why, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I think every game's going to be close, and I don't trust Cliff Kingsbury in close games right now. I don't trust Zane Gonzalez right now in close games. I think there's going to be a lot of close losses, and I don't fire anybody. I think they'll figure it out in 2021, but there's been too many examples of clock management, timeout management, fourth down decisions that I just disagree with, and the Cardinals lose those games.
72% say 2 or 3, 15% 0 or 1, and then 13% say 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. It's a good split.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
The San Francisco 49ers have agreed with the NFL and the Cardinals to play their Week 13 and 14 scheduled home games at State Farm Stadium. Here's head coach Cliff Kingsbury.
Obviously a challenging situation for them. I'm glad it worked out that we could, you know, host them in a way and allow them to use these facilities and continue to keep their season going. It's kind of 2020 in a nutshell, and I'm just glad it all worked out for them.
Will this have any impact on the Cardinals other than it just being like, this is our house?
You know what? Honestly, I don't like this. I don't. Yeah. I get it. I don't like it. You know, everybody's trying to accommodate everybody else because it's 2020 and we're all up against it. And I get that. And I applaud the NFL for doing it. But I'm territorial, man. I've been territorial my whole life. This is the spot that I used to warm up on right here on the field, all right? Not you. Hey, this is our sideline. This is the home sideline. We always stand on this sideline. This is our house. Now we've got this neighboring tribe that's going to take over the stadium. It's honestly, it's like the Visigoths, Basinonians. You're camped on the Danube River. And suddenly you go to battle to fight the Romans, and it's a long campaign. And then the Romans, they push you back across the Danube, and you find out the Franks have taken over your village. What a mess.
If this was like Seattle, the Cardinals are already done playing Seattle. So if it was Seattle, I would say the answer's no. The Cardinals in Week 16 are at home against the 49ers, so I'm going to say yes, because now the 49ers have two games in your building to get comfortable. And I realize they play here every year, but all of a sudden now Arizona is going to be home to them for a month before they play Arizona. I don't see how you don't get more familiar, more comfortable, and used to the situation, which therefore obviously makes that game easier on you. Their road trip is going to be from a resort to Glendale when they play Saturday. No plane flight, no big day. It's just so much easier when they play the Cardinals in Week 16. So, yes, I think it dramatically affects the Cardinals.
Due to continued COVID-19 concerns, the Baltimore Ravens-Pittsburgh Steelers football game has been moved to tomorrow at 1:40 p.m. Arizona time. This is the third time the Ravens-Steelers game, originally scheduled for Thanksgiving night, has been moved. Here's Steelers offensive lineman Zach Banner.
At some point, there has to be a decision made that we're going to play this game. Like, I just don't see how, honestly, and this is how kind of most of us feel, we just don't understand how the whole Denver thing, like, I understand, like, you know, there's been people getting tested every single day. That probably is the only rational reason. They, you know, they're not sure if there's any more contagious people over there, but I mean, Denver's just played without any quarterback. You know what I mean? They just brought their guy up off a P-squad. So I thought we have extended rosters for a reason, but that's just me.
It's funny how this is going. Pittsburgh is upset that they feel like they're waiting for Baltimore to have their quarterback before they play. And yet Denver had to play without their quarterbacks. And that's why Pittsburgh's outraged, and that's why he's saying, hey, a decision should be made. We should be having to play the game. He's basically saying they shouldn't get their guy if
sure.
he's not ready.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily disagree with him, but Baltimore supposedly followed the protocols so the NFL doesn't want to punish him.
Ask yourself this, Basinonians. How would you like to be the Pittsburgh Steelers right now? If you're Mike Tomlin, how are you feeling about playing this game? I'm 10-0 right now. And there's one thing that could derail this season, COVID-19. You've got this outbreak, which you call what's going on in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
You've got an outbreak like we have not seen.
It's supposedly worse than the Marlins.
It's worse than the Tennessee Titans, mm-hmm. supposedly. We've got an outbreak like we have not seen. And now, all of a sudden, you got this 10-0 team. Let's go play the Ravens. Because everyone came back negative on their test. Oh my goodness. What a position to be in. What a mess.
The big winner in all this is Washington, because I don't think anybody in a million years would ever think the Washington football team would have a chance against Pittsburgh. But now Pittsburgh plays Baltimore on a Wednesday, and they turn around 5 days later and play Washington on a Monday. And the Washington football team now has an extra day to get ready for it, and they play a more tired team. They'll have more rest. Again, no way do you pick Washington in that game under normal situations. Now, maybe. I mean, I'm still not picking them, but maybe.
I think they're going to win the NFC East.
That's such a gutsy prediction. Wow. Coming up next, the best clips from Cliff. Cliff Notes is coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's Cliff Notes. Cliff Notes. The best clips from Cliff on Doug and Wolf.
I'm not sure why we had the Justin Bieber plan for my walk-up song.
Bear, can we start this again?
It's Cliff Notes. Cliff Notes. The best clips from Cliff on Doug and Wolf.
So let me go through a lot of the statements of Cliff Kingsbury to help catch you up on where he stands. I loved one of the first questions he was asked at the press conference. Is basically what you saw on Sunday the same that you saw Monday morning when you're watching the film?
Obviously, I had some opportunities there throughout the game to win the game and didn't get it done, but kind of saw it like I did yesterday.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's always a staple. I've asked that question plenty of times, my own self over here, and whether you're expecting the head coach to have some sort of epiphany, I'm not exactly sure. He has a front row seat on the sideline. He saw it all, but...
Well, Paul, remember, you'll get that with Bruce Arians, because he'll tell you, you know, actually, it wasn't my fault. It was somebody else's. So you will get a change sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. you might get a personal rip job on someone if it's BA. You're right.
I guarantee you, though, he saw that tape a couple hours after the game. He watched that tape multiple times a couple of hours after the game, not Monday, Sunday.
Yesterday, we had former Cardinals kicker Jay Feely on the show, and Jay said, don't dump Zane Gonzalez, but he didn't really give him a ringing endorsement. He just said, in the world we live in, you're not going to be able to get somebody with a better leg right now. Just deal with it, let him go through it, and he believes Zane will figure it out. Cliff Kingsbury was asked about the psyche of Zane Gonzalez and if Cliff is worried about it.
I don't. Zane understands that that comes with the territory, and, you know, those are kicks we got to make, and he's been really good, like I said, yesterday for us, and he understands that, you know, we got to make those kicks when we have that opportunity.
I wonder about the psyche of the head coach. Is he apt to change his play calling and his strategy based on Zane Gonzalez and the performance or lack thereof we've seen in clutch situations? How does that impact some of his decision-making when he's trying to figure out how to attack a defense with the game hanging in the balance?
It's interesting. I like the way Cliff is thinking on this in regard to Zane Gonzalez after talking to Jay Feely. Jay Feely, we had him on yesterday. It was incredible just hearing Jay Feely talk about Zane Gonzalez and his own career as well. And talking about how he started out and how he missed, what, three game-winning field goals in a row? And then from that point on went on to not miss a game-winning field goal in 9 years?
I mean, Jay got lampooned on Saturday Night Live. He was the subject of a Saturday Night Live sketch as the kicker for either the Jets or the Giants at the time.
He said it was the Giants because he had missed three kicks in Seattle. And they mocked what it must have been like to be the kicker on the plane flight that long with a whole team of people that are angry at you. And I actually watched it. A couple of people tweeted it to me. It was pretty classic. I'm with you, Paul. I don't like that Cliff didn't go for those fourth and ones against Miami or last weekend either time, just because I don't think you should ever trust a kicker over that long when you've got the offensive weapons you do. It doesn't mean if it's fourth and seven you go for it anyway. But with those weapons, fourth and one, I think he's going to change his tune. He's a stubborn dude, but I don't think he's that stubborn.
He's aggressive enough already. Now how much more aggressive does he get, and does he have to go for it on fourth down considering the struggles of Zane Gonzalez?
Magic words, don't tell a coach. Have they figured you out?
I'm not sure if figure out is the right word.
As Cliff was asked about the RPO game of Kyler Murray.
They obviously had a good plan and wanted to try and, you know, contain him in the running game. And when that happens, we got to be more productive with the backs and getting yards that way. And I thought at times we were, but just not consistent enough in that run game.
Look, defenses have adjusted. It's now the Cardinals' turn to adjust. And it's not just the X's and O's. It's the rest of the players who are supposed to be playmakers. And if you listen in depth to some of what Cliff is talking about, he's referring to maybe a lack of detail, attention to detail. Where's the precision in the passing game? Where's the route depth and being where you're supposed to be at that precise time? This is the NFL. There's no margin for error. And based on what I'm reading between the lines and what Cliff Kingsbury shared, he's not getting that sort of attention to detail on offense, especially the passing game.
Yeah, getting a lot of rundown pressure as well, right? A lot of teams going man on that RPO right there. That's the way to play an RPO offense. You play an awful lot of man. You play some man right there. And they're not only doing that, but they're also mush rushing from time to time. They're also rushing some guys where they're coming up, getting the blocks, and then dropping off into coverage underneath, into the passing lanes. This is the approach that defensive coordinators are going to continue to develop and take against Kyler Murray until you do something about it.
Interesting you said that. Coach Kingsbury was asked about whether or not Kyler is getting blitzed more often. And his answer was more the league than Kyler.
Yeah, I think when you look league-wide, that's kind of the trend right now is teams, a lot of them are doing those zero pressures and trying to sell out and get hits on the quarterback and get the ball out of guys' hands when they, instead of letting them run around and make plays. So I don't know if it's specific to the Cardinals, but I feel like we've had our moments against the pressure and you know, like to have some plays back against it as well, but week in, week out, you just never know what you're going to see.
Some moments, not nearly enough, though. They haven't made defenses pay nearly enough for bringing the blitz. Where are some of those throws to DeAndre Hopkins if he is in man, but there's only one man? Guess what? He's still open. He's proven that. Where are some of the other guys in the ability to get open? Make the defenses pay when they dial up those blitzes, and obviously the Cardinals have not done that as of late.
When I hear Cliff talking about zero blitz as well, zero coverage where you go man across the board and bring everybody base on onions, I think of the Miami Dolphins and what the Miami Dolphins did in going with a lot of zero looks every time the Cardinals would jump into 10 personnel. Whether there was an empty set or not, one back, no tight ends, four wide receivers. Every time they got into it, the Miami Dolphins would go with zero look. Doesn't mean they brought zero every time, but that's how they defended it. And I think you're going to see more and more of that the more the Cardinals use 10 personnel.
It's interesting. I assume it's easy to play quarterback when you're sitting down watching the game, but a lot of retired quarterbacks who are doing NFL color analyst jobs, I've noticed when you are blitzing one guy, every color analyst picks it up. Every color analyst says, this guy's coming. Before the rest of his novices can tell, he says, this guy's coming. Yet every time there's a whole bunch of people at the line of scrimmage, even that quarterback color analyst will ask, which one of these guys are coming? So you could tell that they're also feeding into the zero blitz as well. So Cliff, what do you think about Kyler having 29 yards rushing or 100 yards rushing? Which games he does what? The game plan.
We want Kyler to play his game, and there'll be games where he'll rush for more yards than he did yesterday, and there'll be games where he throws for a ton of yards. And, you know, that's the NFL. That's week in, week out, trying to take what a defense gives you and execute at a high level. And the last couple of weeks, we haven't been at our best offensively. There's no question. You got to find a way to create some more explosive plays and be more efficient on third downs. But that's the league, and you got to give both those defenses credit.
Come for the arms, stay for the legs, but defenses should not be able to take away both. They just shouldn't. You should be able to use one or the other, and depending on what they want to take away, you should be able to exploit a defense accordingly. Obviously, they've been lacking the big plays, the big chunk throws down the field the last couple of games. Where has that gone? Why has that vanished? I'm not exactly sure. It's like that metal monolith in the middle of the Utah desert. Where to go? How to get there? I don't know, but There's some soul searching right now, I think,
yep,
schematically, as to how can they restore the explosive play. Because look, if you have to go 10, 12, 15 plays every drive to get on the scoreboard, that's advantage defense.
No doubt about it, Paulie. Well said. Listen, this game plan defensively against Kyler Murray, it's starting to solidify right now. We were talking about it yesterday, but it's the truth. You look at the last two games in particular, make them hand the ball off, keep them in the pocket, force them to throw everything in front of you. Don't allow him to throw the ball down the field. Force him to beat you with his arm. We're talking about Kyler Murray. Beat you with his arm. Man. If you've got to depend on Kyler Murray running the football, ladies and gentlemen, if you have to depend on him doing that for him to be effective, for him to be able to throw the ball down the field, you're talking about Michael Vick.
And there was another question that asked of Cliff Kingsbury, and admittedly, it's a name that I didn't talk about yesterday. I didn't think about yesterday. But would we all agree that Sunday was the worst special teams day,
yes,
for the Arizona Cardinals,
yep,
since, of course, you know,
yes,
Amos Jones?
Yes.
Well, having said that, I'm going to give credit to Mark McClune. I think it was him in the media who asked, how did the loss of Trent Sherfield affect special teams?
He's a big part of that. There's no question. We've got to make those plays, and we have the opportunity regardless of who's out there. But he takes a lot of pride in that. We take a lot of pride in that unit. And he's been really solid for us. So I'm hoping we'll have him back this week.
There's Cliff Kingsbury saying, hey, we got to make the play no matter what. But he's a big deal. He's a big deal.
All right, so I'll answer that with a question to the four-time special team Pro Bowler sitting next to you. Wolf, can one guy have a trickle-down effect where it screws up all the teams?
No, Paul. To me, no. To answer your question, let me say that bluntly, no. You're talking about, let's see, Trent Sherfield, does he punt? Does he kick? No. Yeah, coverage-wise, he's a great cover guy. There's no doubt about that. But if you're talking about one guy, no.
But you would agree punt return was a problem, or punt cover, I should say,
well,
was a problem.
I said that the cover teams, once again, yeah, you hate missing a guy like Trent Sherfield, but no. You better hope not.
He's a big part of that.
Well, and what
he's
was
a big part. I mean, yes.
What was
what is
amazing?
Cliff gonna say? He is. He's a great teams player.
And we said this in pregame. The Patriots special teams have been excellent for a long time. In fact, they entered the game with the most block kicks since 2014. Yeah, that wasn't an issue.
Yeah.
That obviously didn't come to fruition whatsoever. It was all the other aspects of special teams play where the New England Patriots got an advantage.
Coming up next, maximum football time. Two-time Super Bowl champion Max Starks joins us. What does he think needs to change for the Cardinals to win in December? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
What does Max know about special teams?
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. He played tackle in the NFL for more than a decade. Max Starks. Max Starks. Maximum football. Maximum football. With Doug and Wolf.
Please welcome, from the University of Florida, tackle Max Starks.
He is called in on the corona.
That's so good.
I was just
all
talking
right, Tony
to
Romo.
I was just talking to Wolf about a situation that was on my mind, and boy, I'm sure Coulter Automotive Group is thrilled with that one. I'm a winner today. Didn't remember my wallet and couldn't remember Coulter. So Max Starks is joining us
Max
on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, the two-time Super Bowl winning offensive lineman. You know what? It was because I was so worried about you, Max. How's your health? How's everybody in the family doing?
You know, everybody's doing well.
Good.
I appreciate it, Doug. And, you know, I'm excited because Paulie actually posed a question before the commercial break, kind of goading me on about what do I know about special teams. Well, let him know that the venerable Jay Feely knows that I know about special teams because I blocked one of his kicks, okay?
Oh! How about
there
that?
We go. I know, and Jay's gonna light me up because of that one, because he hates when I mention that. But anywho, no, I just thought it was funny when I was listening. I was like, "What does he know?" Well,
yeah.
I played. I mean, I've done the job. I mean, I've had to do it in look situations, but I've also done some game time work as well.
Player.
Listen, if there's one guy, I mean, especially back in my age, but I can tell you, if there was one guy that would be all over, oh, yeah, there's Trent Sherfield, it changed everything for the cover teams, I'd be the guy. I'd be the guy saying that. But I can tell you right now, because you've eliminated double teams, it's not that big a deal anymore.
I'm more of a shock wolf that, Max, you weren't on field goal block all the time. I mean, at your height, why? I don't care what you do at left tackle. I'm putting you out there on field goal block. I don't care if you're tired. Suck it up.
Listen. I mean, Coach Tomlin definitely made it a point. I don't know if it, I think it was more so punishment, but but yeah, no. I mean, I played it. I played it for 2 years, and it was. Trust me, that was back when we had the push, and you could actually hit the
center,
hit the long snapper,
yeah.
which was nice at my size. But but I think, you know, obviously that's changed, so it's a lot tougher, and you have guys that try and jump over everything. Because of that. But no, I mean, that's one of the biggest things, and it gets so overlooked, the play of special teams, because special teams is that third, you know, is the third corner of the triangle, right, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is important. We often joke about it because there's no specific position that's dedicated as that outside of the kicker and the snapper, because guys play other positions. But it's that third element that is the difference in a game. And hopefully people realize that. And we've realized that from, you know, hate to say it because Amo was one of my special teams coaches over the years. You know, Amos Jones highlighted it and we kind of made a spectacle of it. But that's how important it is that you do have to respect that special teams coach because he doesn't have position coaches really helping him. That's all on him, and there's three different distinct segments you have to worry about: the actual field goal kick and defense, the actual kickoff and kickoff return, and punt return. Those are three specific segments that require different skill sets, and so it's very important. It should not be overlooked, and you know that's been the difference really in a lot of these Cardinals games when we're talking about whether it's a victory or a loss. So that's how important it is. And, you know, I know what Jay said, not a ringing endorsement, but he kind of backed Zane. And I agree. I mean, we look at Chandler Catanzaro and we do make a reference to that as though it was, you know, the Dark Ages during medieval history. But it was still something that matters. And when we're talking about a playoff push, that particular unit has to be solid if you want to get into the playoffs. And B, you want to remain in the playoffs. That phase needs to be stronger than it was on Sunday and how it has been for a lot of these losses.
Yes or no question that's leading into something else, because I always tell you about, or we always talk to listeners about, you are a two-time Super Bowl winning champion, but did you ever even have a losing season when you were at Pittsburgh?
No, I did not. Thank you for asking.
I bring that up for this reason. As you look at the Cardinals, you, I assume, felt it when November became December, and I don't mean because of Pittsburgh weather. Do you tangibly feel the game has changed now when you have 4 or 5 games left and we're arguing about, do you have a winning season? Are you going to make the playoffs? What is your seed going to be? Did you feel the pressure of that? What's about to happen to the Cardinals right now?
Oh, yeah. The playoff push and December football is real. This is the fourth quarter of the season, and there's teams that are on the rise and there's teams that are on the decline, and you want to be the team that's on the rise going into December. And you know, that's what they say, you know, it's a December to remember. That's what people remember when you talk about how the season went, is how you win this fourth quarter, because it all matters now. It was great in September and October and November. But what you do in December, that's the lasting image that you have for your fans. Mm. Because they're either going to be pissed by New Year's or they're going to be happy by New Year's. Mm. And, you know, it determines what that resolution is. You know, at midnight when you're like, oh, okay, oh, God, all I want is for my Cardinals to win the first round of the playoffs, the wild card round. Or, oh my God, we need to fire everybody and get a new team by draft time next year. You know, it that's how it goes. And so the Cardinals are in a unique position that they still control their destiny into the playoffs. It's not that they have to worry about, oh, if this team wins and this team loses, and you know, next thing you know, you're doing math on the sidelines on a little grease board, or you have a Surface tablet, so I'm sure there's a calculator app. But that's where it comes in, is that these games matter. And this momentum that you can create or that you can build is what carries you into the playoffs. And that's what we knew in Pittsburgh, was that when we got to December, December football is the only football that mattered at the end of the day. And, you know, you reference I never had a losing season, but that was one of the most key important things. We had to have these games in December. It didn't matter who was on the schedule. I don't care if they lined up back when I played the Patriots four times in a row on the schedule. We knew we had to win those games if we wanted to get into the playoffs. Mm. And that's what mattered. And that's where the Cardinals have to be right now. Their only focus is week to week in December, but we have to have these wins. Forget November. November sucked. We get it. But December is a brand new month. It's December 1st. I got 24 more days until Santa comes down the tree. I need him to be bringing gifts, and I need to do the things to get on the nice list. That's that playoff nice list, and we're still in the list. Yes, they lost three out of the last four games, but guess what? They're still sitting in the seventh seed.
Yeah.
So that means they're still in position to be in the playoffs. They now have to either maintain and build upon that so that it's not a one-and-done situation come January.
Max, I'm not putting you on the couch, but if you want to sit down on it, have at it. Kyler Murray. Okay. Kyler Murray. Where
okay,
do you
can
see?
Can I lay down on the couch?
There you go. See, I want to see where you go.
It's a therapy session right now.
For him or you?
For both of us. Both of us. Maybe he's listening. I don't know. It's Tuesdays. They have a day off. But no, I think for Kyler, the biggest thing is he has to humanize.
You might have answered the question by not answering.
Confounding.
Yeah, it is. It is because, like, think about this. What was that? About week five of the season, we had this conversation about consistency, right?
Yes.
Remember, he didn't have a great throwing percentage.
Sure.
The balls were floating on him, and he wasn't accurate. And then a couple weeks later, he goes and shuts me up because he has the Dallas game. And then we now get to this last little melange of November. And it's been up and down, but it's been mostly his legs outside of the Hail Mary. This is where it now becomes, how can Kyler and Cliff get closer to the same page? Because Kyler is not the best at emoting, right?
Yes.
He's not the best emotional guy. Like, you know, cameramen and analysts don't like going to the sidelines to Kyler Murray. Because now I got to justify this to fans type of approach. Because he's never really high, and he's never really low, but he has resting Jay Cutler face right now in his emotions. Mm. And I think that creates a negative sentiment in our mind because he's not you want a guy that's focused. And I get where his psyche is. Like, he is all about winning. He's never been through this type of adversity until he got to Arizona. But he also hasn't had the requisite experience through all of these emotions and dealt with stretches and bouts of tough times.
I want to stay on this point, Max, if you don't mind, but Bobby Hurley's coming up in just a second.
Yeah.
So we're going to have more with Max Starks at 9:00 when we're just going to ask, how patient should we be? 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, week 12? When do you say, Kyler, it's time? This is what you need to learn. This is where you need to be in your development. More with Max Starks coming up at 9:00 for Maximum Football. Up next, head coach Bobby Hurley. They started 2-1, and they got the Pac-12 Freshman of the Week. How are you going to keep this train going? Because guess what's next? Conference season. That's coming up with Bobby Hurley on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
This is the Sun Devil Fast Break with ASU men's head basketball coach Bobby Hurley. The Sun Devil Fast Break is presented by Arizona Ford Dealers.
We do this with head coach Bobby Hurley every Tuesday at 8:45. He calls in to join us, talk ASU hoops. Coach, good morning. Do you feel like your trip to Connecticut was a success?
Well, good morning, guys. I think from the standpoint of getting our new players the opportunity to compete, you know, against some high level competition very early, get their feet under them, it was successful. Of course, when you have a chance to play, you know, one of the better teams in the country in a high profile game, you're trying to get a victory. You know, we just didn't do enough things against a team of that quality within that game to have the outcome that we were looking for.
Did you learn anything about your team and about your players after this trip, Bobby? Anything not only individually but also collectively?
I just felt like in that game, Villanova was just ahead of us. I feel like I didn't feel like there was a huge differential player for player necessarily, but more in terms of where their team was at, their cohesiveness, how they operated and functioned throughout that game. They felt like a well-oiled machine in that game, whereas we're still searching a little bit, still trying to find an identity, still learning to play together. And then, you know, from that film session, we're able to, you know, look at all the things that we didn't do that, especially in the first half with our defense and our rebounding, that put us in a position to not have the success we're looking for.
Bobby, what are those film sessions like with you? Do you stop the film, stand up, and yell at them? How intense are these film study sessions?
Well, I mean, I think to some degree it's therapy too. You know, as you go through a loss you're kind of in the mourning process of losing, you have to get it out of your system and we confront everything and look at the mistakes that were made. And, you know, I think the focus for us in that game was it should have been a lot closer at the half than it was. You know, we didn't rebound the ball at the end of the first half, which gave Villanova, you know, multiple opportunities to get second possessions, which they cashed in on. And instead of us maybe being down 2 to 4 points, we were down 9. Which was a big ask. And then we came out of the gate really strong to start the second half, scored 6 straight points to cut it to 3, had some momentum, and then immediately had a defensive breakdown in our help defense, which allowed Villanova to shoot a wide open 3 to extend the lead to 6 again. So there were things like that we're going to go over. We're going to reinforce with our team to avoid these things continuing to pop up.
Head coach Bobby Hurley joining Doug and Wolf. And Bobby, I have a sickness that is college basketball. Wolf mocks me all the time for how much college basketball I watch. I probably watch more than anybody that's not paid to watch college basketball. And I heard something this weekend I have never heard a coach say in the history of college basketball.
But, you know, are we ready to take it to the next level and, like, commit? You know, or are we willing to put the toilet seat down every time after?
So I have to ask, in your experience, how long does it take for a team to start putting the toilet seat down and come together? A couple games, a couple months? Where are you right now in the toilet seat process?
Look, that was on the heels of a poor practice and too many weeks of us going at each other, and so that was a bit of a rant. Wish I could have taken some of that back, but it's I think the guys.
It was classic. No way are we letting you take it back. That was fantastic.
I think we did a great job the other night in generating turnovers. I thought our bench provided a big spark. We were scoring it right out of the gate versus Houston Baptist, but our defense. Jalen House came in and was really good, and Kamani Lawrence. So we got some good production, and then that got us playing well at that end of the floor, and that ignited our offense. So we're going to have to, really good teams that really win big, defend, and we have to do a better job at that end of the floor.
Bobby, do you feel like you're prepared to play a conference opponent after this 4-game warm-up, basically?
I do. I mean, we played, you know, a really good Rhode Island team that's they've come back and won some games after our initial game, and then, you know, Villanova was a really stern test, and we were able to get back flying across the country and on a short recovery and got another game under our belt on Sunday. So we're gonna have a couple of good days of practice, and then we're gonna play a hungry Cal team on Thursday.
With you being a 4-year player at Duke at point guard, what is the biggest jump that a junior to a senior point guard, because gosh, we just don't have a lot of them anymore at Power Five conferences, need to make? When you're looking at Remy Martin, what's that next thing for him when he's already so experienced?
Yeah, Remy has done a great job right out of the gate, allowing Josh Christopher to be himself, allowing, Marcus Bagley had a great game the other day, and, he's not threatened by the success of others, and you could see it by how he's playing. He's really focused on distributing the basketball and getting his teammates involved, and then, I know personally, as we get moving forward into these big games that, down the stretch, he's proven that he can make plays in big games and close teams out. So I think he's got a really good approach to what he's doing right now. And he's told the team that, he's not about statistics and scoring. He's already been one of the top scorers in the Pac-12. He doesn't have to prove that again. He just wants to win, and he's willing to do what it takes to win.
Bobby, you mentioned his name. How do you think Josh Christopher has played so far? Your thoughts on this hyper-talented dude?
I think Josh was terrific, especially in the Villanova game. Big lights, big game, high profile. It was really the only game that was happening on Thanksgiving at that time. And for a freshman to score 28 points, and he did it very efficiently. He was 11 for 17. And, a bunch of rebounds in our last game. Again, a very, very efficient scoring numbers. Shooting great percentages. Very pleased with where he is. He's a very focused kid, very talented, very gifted kid. And, he's doing it not only in practice or, with all the hype. He's kind of he's exceeding, what my expectations would have been for him at this point.
I know you're the coach of the Sun Devils, but you also coach individual kids. Do you coach a glue guy differently than a Christopher who is just dripping with NBA talent? How do you balance those two?
I don't necessarily think you do. There are certain, non-negotiables, things that you're stressing that everyone, needs to adhere to. But certainly, each guy, I'm not going to ask a certain guy to do something that Josh could do if they can't do it. There's a certain skill set that everyone has, and you try and really evaluate each player and kind of coach them to what their capabilities are.
So what can you tell us about Cal, Bobby?
They won last night, beat Nicholls State last night, lost to Oregon State. They got Matt Bradley, who's on the Jerry West watch list for shooting guards, top shooting guards in the country. He's a guy that averaged 17 a game for Cal last year. And, they play hard. They really defend. They got good size. We really got to have a couple solid days, and then we'll see what we get on Thursday.
The only way you made that toilet seat reference is if you've been scolded a couple times. From your wife, I'm assuming. Come on, admit it.
Of course.
Oh, my goodness.
Bobby, I thought it was fantastic. I'm glad you opened up like that.
Honestly, right now I had a hard time with it, Bobby, only from the standpoint your intensity level is so legendary. It's so high. I don't even see you doing anything that's even remotely close to life.
My attention to detail must get better.
It's
mind-boggling for me.
See,
to think
he's
about
even intense
doing
in relationships. That's who Bobby Early is.
Yes,
love having you on the show. Thank you, Bobby. Good luck against Cal.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. There's Bobby Hurley, head coach of Arizona State, who joins us every Tuesday at 8:45. Coming up next, more with Max Starks. We left off in a Kyler Murray question of how patient should we be for him to get it when it comes to something as simple as sideline demeanor. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bobby didn't date.